So what does the town today look like compared to when you were reporting there nearly 30 years ago?
I was there from 1990 to 1991, and the two biggest stories I was reporting on at the time were the incoming flood wall that had not been built yet, but in reaction to a couple pretty devastating floods that hit the town. And the movie Mate One by John Sayles had just been released a couple years before. So that was still the buzz, and that was, everyone was talking about Mate One. And for to build the flood wall, they literally had to raise part of the town that was outside of the flood wall and then reorient the way you entered the town. Previously, when you came into Mate One, you came under the train tracks and drove straight through the middle of town. So coal trucks and all the traffic went straight through the middle of downtown. Now, because of the flood wall, you actually go around behind the town and then enter basically backwards to the way it used to be. So it's really kind of refocused and reoriented the entire town the way it looks. When I was down there recently, I spoke with David Hatfield. He and his wife own a bed and breakfast in the town. Here's how he sees the changes that have come to his town because of the flood wall.
30 years ago, you had coal trucks running up down the street here because the main highway came right through the middle of Mate Street, which is the main street here in town. There were businesses that were geared around the coal industry. You had restaurants, you had clothing stores, you had all these typical small town retail businesses back then. Well, since the coal business has dried up steadily, then those businesses have dried up steadily. But when the flood wall was done, they moved the road to main highway back here on the other side of town. So it took the main flow of traffic out of the main street here in town. And they said that's what killed downtown Mate One. But I look at it as possibly being a blessing eventually if we could turn this into a tourist town and you could see the Mate One Massacre being redone here every day and we had small shops and a lot of people walking here in the streets. It's a blessing that that main traffic is now over there and we could have that foot traffic. So I think it really it is a blessing and we could turn it, we could use it that way.
Yeah, and one of the big moves is to focus on tourism across the state of West Virginia, and it seems like in lots of parts of Central Appalachia as well, and obviously Mate One has taken this approach as well. So this means that instead of bringing home fat salaries from mining coal, residents will have minimum wage type jobs, is my understanding, is the types of jobs that comes from the tourism industry.
I think it's got to help. I mean, versus no jobs at all. But it's really going to be impossible to replace those $70,000 to $100,000 a year coal jobs. I mean, they're at least with tourism jobs anyway. There's no way that tourism is ever going to bring in the kind of salaries that the coal industry ever did. One of the most interesting things to me was just the amount of, not Mate One itself, but in Mingo County, the coal jobs that have dropped off. You know, at one point there were 3,000 people or so working in coal mining, whether it was driving coal trucks or actively mining themselves. And that actually brought in $130 million in wages. That was about a third of all the jobs in the county were coal mining related, and more than half of the income, according to the government records. Today, there's about 1,300 people working in the coal mining industry, and for $107 million worth of income. The problem is, 1991 dollars versus 2019 dollars, $130 million in 1991 is equal to about $245 million today. So the coal industry has almost dropped off half of the income level that it had at the time, too. So it's really hurt the local economy.
It's decreased even more than what the numbers on the surface might indicate.
Exactly. Okay. It's interesting, though, when I was there 30 years ago, the idea of tourism wasn't even on anybody's radar. I mean, there were a couple people talking about it, again, because of the movie Mate One and the Mate One Massacre.
And it is my understanding, to be fair, that while it might not replace some of the coal jobs, it's a way for the community to find ways to take pride in where they live and fix things up so that not only tourists who visit for a week, but perhaps even businesses might be attracted to the region.
Sure.
and start more. Or, you know, and also entrepreneurship to start our own businesses.
There's a lot of people who are stepping up. David Hatfield that I mentioned earlier, and we'll hear from again, but he said there's four or five places within just a few miles of where he was in Matewan that are providing lodging services. Now, whether they're campgrounds or bed and breakfasts or just Airbnb type things, there's plenty of people who are coming up with new ways to give guided tours and to accommodate the riders for the ATV trails and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of different ways that people are trying to expand that. Here's David again. His bed and breakfast holds about 40 people, and most of them are there to visit or to ride the ATV trail system.
We've been happy with the results. Our business is steadily growing, and most of that is due to the trail system. So the Half of McCoy Trails is playing an integral part in the development of tourism here in the southern part of West Virginia.
That's interesting. So he sees the tourist dollars from the Hatfield-McCoy Trail system as a very positive thing. It's done well for him.
It has done well for him. He's not making huge amounts of money at this point, but he's doing okay. But at the same time, he recognizes that ATV tourism isn't going to save Mingo County or southern West Virginia. It's just not going to bring those same kind of jobs that coal once did.
The trail system is kind of like our respirator. We're on life support.
He thinks that the area needs to attract tourists who can ride the rivers, expand its tourism just beyond the four-wheeling, because not everyone's going to be able to do that. I spoke to a father and daughter who have West Virginia roots, but they actually have lived in Georgia, the daughter all her life, and the father grew up in Bluefield in that area, but had moved away 50 years ago. The father, Bill Powell, said he'd been planning this trip to West Virginia for some years now.
We came specifically to Matewan because I'd wanted to see the site of the origin of the Bloody Matewan business. We'll work our way back to Bramble, going to Colwood and some places like that, and then we've got to head back south tomorrow.
His daughter Gwen said she was reasonably surprised by what they found as they traveled to places in McDowell and Mingo counties, and she said she'd like to come back and stay longer.
We've enjoyed having all the different foods. We found an authentic Greek restaurant right there in the middle of Kimball.
Yes.
We pulled off and saw coal being taken out and put on the train cars, and have found abandoned cities. I mean, the city of Jaeger?
Yep. Jaeger, yeah.
Jaeger looks like literally a forgotten town that is, there's still a pocket here or there of people, but you could just see what has been. What was once a proud town has literally been forgotten.
So these are tourists who aren't there for the ATV trails. They came for the history.
Right. And as Gwen points out, there are some people out there who have some family connection to southern West Virginia and just want to learn more about the area.
There's so many people who have West Virginia roots. It's always amazing when I say that, you know, my dad's from West Virginia, all that, and whenever Country Roads comes on the radio, we're all singing out loud, and that slogan of Almost Heaven, I think there's a tenderness in the heart of anybody who has ever made a connection to West Virginia that can come to life on these heritage tours.
Actually, sitting on the front porch of David Hatfield's bed and breakfast, I sat down next to a gentleman named Rich Roach. Rich actually is from Hagerstown, Maryland, and he's been coming for the last 6 or 7 years now, comes to Matewan and spends a week and just enjoys the town. But he's not there for the Hatfields and McCoys trails either. He said he actually watched the movie Matewan back in 1987 and has been intrigued by the area ever since. Finally, just a few years ago, decided he was going to come to Matewan, so he and his wife picked up. And Rich said that they've had such a great experience in coming to Matewan into West Virginia that they come back every year for a week.
About 6 years ago, finally said, you know what, we're gonna hop in the car and we're gonna go down and spend a week down in the Matewan area and explore all that history. And then when we got down here, kind of got more interested in the Hatfields and McCoy component as well as the Matewan component.
Okay, so some people might call the Hatfield and McCoy feud hillbilly tourism. Some people. I'm not saying that we take that stance here or that I do. But how do people feel about what some people do call hillbilly tourism?
You know, I recently spoke to Kimberly Collins. She's an author. She actually lives in Tennessee now, but she grew up in Matewan. I asked her that question, what she thought about hillbilly tourism.
My only issue with any of it is the hillbilly tourism. And I think that they're sticking that stereotype, that label on themselves, that is, it's not fair. It's not fair to them. I would rather see something that is a little more, that draws a wider variety of people in for the history and the culture and art, real art. There are some amazing artists that I know that live there.